to Hosea chapter 12. I can too. Interesting chapter tonight. Got some good things in it for us here. Hosea chapter 12. So this is about God reproving Ephraim. Remember, Ephraim was another synonym for Israel, the people that were causing the trouble. And we're nearing the end. And so in this chapter and the next, we'll be looking at God's chastisement of the prodigal people, the people that had turned their back on God. And so that's where we sit at the moment. All right, so now let's just start out by listening to the chapter. So you got your place, chapter 12. And watch as we read the chapter. But let me just give you a little bit of heads up on it. He starts out, the first two verses are rebuke, and then he gives three verses, verses 3 to 5, or actually kind of 3 to 6, a little bit of history about Jacob, and then he talks two more verses of judgment, and then two verses of God's promised blessing, and then a verse of judgment, and then two verses of history again, and then he ends with some more judgment. So if you keep an eye on that as you go through, it'll maybe help it make more sense, okay? I am.
Chapter 12. Ephraim feedeth on wind, and followeth after the east wind. He daily increaseth lies and desolation, and they do make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried into Egypt. The Lord hath also a controversy with Judah, and will punish Jacob according to his ways. According to his doings will he recompense him. He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and by his strength he had power with God. Yea, he had power over the angel, and prevailed. He wept and made supplication unto him. He found him in Bethel, and there he spake with us, even the Lord God of hosts. The Lord is his memorial. Therefore, turn thou to thy God. Keep mercy and judgment, and wait on thy God continually. He is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. And Ephraim said, yet I am become rich. I have found me out substance. In all my labors they shall find none iniquity in me that was sin. And I, that am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt, will yet make thee to dwell in tabernacles, as in the days of the solemn feast. I have also spoken by the prophets, and I have multiplied visions, and used similitudes by the ministry of the prophets. Is there iniquity in Gilead? Surely they are vanity. They sacrifice bullocks in Gilgal. Yea, their altars are as heaps in the furrows of the fields. And Jacob fled into the country of Syria, and Israel served for a wife. And for a wife he kept sheep. And by a prophet the Lord brought Israel out of Egypt, and by a prophet was he preserved. Ephraim provoked him to anger most bitterly. Therefore shall he lead his blood upon him, and his reproach shall his Lord return unto him.
All right. Did you notice what I was telling you as we went through there? Kind of hard to remember all the stuff that I told you. But it jumps back and forth between God's judgment against them, and then some history, and then some God's blessing promised, and we'll see that as we work our way through. So I've highlighted the verses in my Bible with different colors to give it that emphasis, and it helps. So here in verses 1 and 2, Charles Feinberg, a commentator, says that feeding on the wind is a vivid description of for pursuit of empty and vain things which are without profit. So here he starts out in the very first verse, Ephraim feedeth on wind. So it's just the idea that there's no value to that. If you say, oh, I'm hungry, well, go outside and eat some wind. You're not going to get much from it. It's going to be kind of an empty meal for you. And so it is that he was saying there. And instead of returning to God for help, they sought help from the pagan neighbors, the Assyrians in the north and the Egyptians in the south. All right, so again here in verse 1, he talks there at the end about they make a covenant with the Assyrians, that's in the north, and they send oil down to Egypt, obviously to hire or buy them or to make some agreements with Egypt. So they're trying to make friends with the northern and southern enemies, and God is not pleased. God says, that's not where you're going to find the answers you need in life. And though Hosea's message was primarily to Israel, he frequently warned Judah of her coming judgment. And so once again, in verse number 2, God brings out to Jacob, and in Judah, and he talks to Judah and says, don't forget, you know, these things that I'm telling you, it's going to happen to you too. And, you know, that's so sad, because as you look at the history, Remember, the northern ten tribes went into captivity. How long had they been in captivity when the southern tribes went into captivity? About? Garrett?
400 years?
No, 100. So it was about 100 years before the southern kingdom went into captivity. And you stop and think about that. That's a long time. I mean, you think back 100 years ago from now. I mean, we're talking back in the early 1900s. That was a long time ago. A lot of things have happened since then. And so it was with them. They had all that time and all that whole 100 years to reflect and say, you know, it didn't pay off for our brothers and sisters in the north. Maybe we should change our ways. But they didn't listen. They didn't change their ways. They continued on the wrong way until they ended up in captivity. But God keeps reminding them here through Hosea. You know, the best thing that we can learn from history is to learn from history. And God included much history in the Bible for our learning. And that's important for us to remember. Romans 15:4, a very key verse. It says, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope." So God says, the things I wrote before, the Old Testament, was written for our learning so that we can benefit from it and not repeat it. And so that's really why God has given us much of the Bible, is for our benefit, so that we don't have to make the same mistakes other people have made. And you know, that is one of the things that, as parents, you know, we need to teach our children. You know, I've been there, I've done that, that didn't work, don't go that route. You know, and that's really what God is trying to teach us as well. He's showing us in the Bible, he says, Israel went there, they did that, this is what happened, don't go that route. It's not going to pay, it's not going to help you. You need to turn from that. So we need to be very observant in, of those things in our own lives. So, verses 3 to 6, Jacob, the patriarch of Israel, had power with God from his birth. Verse number 3. All right, I mentioned that verses 3 through 5 deal with Jacob in some history. All right, so he talks about how he took his brother by the heel. And you remember that when they were born, they were twins. And Esau came out first, and then Jacob was hanging on his heel as he came out. And then we find later in his life how he fled from his brother, and he saw the ladder of angels come down from heaven, and God spoke with him there in Bethel. And then he saw the Lord's host there, and he made a memorial of that, and it was a reminder to him that God was going to take care of him. Remember, what was the things that Jacob gained from the angelic vision of the angels? What was it that God told him, and how did he respond to it? What did Jacob say? Anybody remember? What did Jacob say? He said he was headed to the north. He was running from his brother. Sasha, what did he say? Well, that was when he was on his way back. When he wrestled with God, that was with his family. They were on their way back from Haran. But on his way up to Haran, is when he saw the angel, the ladder from heaven in Bethel. And when he saw the ladder in heaven from Bethel, he said, God, and I'm paraphrasing it, he said, God, if you will be with me and bring me back to this place again, then you will be my God. Sounds like kind of making a deal with God in a sense. But he had this vision, and he saw that, and God promised him, and he was going to bless him. And Jacob was thinking, you know, how are you going to bless me? I'm all by myself. I'm running from my brother. I don't have anybody. But God did bless him. All right, so then when he got up there in Haran, he meets Laban's family and works for 7 years for his first wife and another 7 years for second wife. And then works 6 years for his cattle. And then so he's worked 20 years. And then he flees and escapes and comes back down. And that's when he was just before Laban caught up with him, it's when he wrestled with God, and that's the night that Sasha was describing here for him, when he was wrestling with God just before Laban caught up with him. Now, Feinberg once again states, it is discernible in the life of Jacob that he ever sought spiritual blessing through his life. He may have sought them before the appointed time, or in the energy of the flesh, but he did long for the things of the Spirit of God and the spiritual life. And, you know, that is true of Jacob. He made a lot of mistakes and didn't always do things the way they should have been done. But he did have a heart for God. And he did want to do what's right. And he wanted to be able to have that fellowship with God. And one of the things that shows us that is even in the life of Joseph. Who taught Joseph the things that Joseph knew that held him together when he went to Egypt? Well, it was obviously his dad. And so he grounded Joseph in the things of God. Now, Joseph listened. Maybe he tried to ground some of his other boys, too. They didn't listen so well. But Joseph did listen. And so it was a good indication of Jacob's walk with God. Now, Jacob talked with God at Bethel when he saw the ladder. And that's in Genesis 28. And so that's what we have just discussed here. Okay, and the Lord was his memorial, and he never forgot that encounter. And with that memory in view, Hosea urged Israel to turn back to God. So here in verse number 6, he says, "Therefore, based on that, based on the fact that God was taking care of Jacob, turn thou to thy God. Keep mercy and judgment, and wait on thy God continually." He says, you need to turn back to God. You just need to turn back to God. So again, Hosea is pleading with the people, come back to God. This has been the message throughout the whole book. God loves you. You've been rebellious. Come back to God. Come back to God. And so we see it continued there. Recalling former times of closeness to God ought to stir our hearts to renew our closeness. And may the Lord revive us again. You know, we really need that. That needs to be the prayer of our heart regularly. God, revive my heart. Help me to be more like what I ought to be. Stir my heart with the fires that used to burn in them and help me to be what you want me to be. That really needs to be our heart cry and our prayer. Then in verses 7 and 8, when Hosea called Israel a merchant, the Hebrew word actually means a Canaanite. The Canaanites were traveling and being merchant-type people, but it was a derogatory term here, and he lived just like the Canaanite pagans that were around him, whose land that he had conquered, and he was both deceitful and oppressive. All right, so here God says he is a merchant, and the balance is of deceit in his hand, and he loves oppression to oppress. Typical unsaved people, you know, they'll rip you off as soon as they can if they get an opportunity, and it was... Nothing's changed over the years. And so he was acting like the pagans around him. And Ephraim boasted of her wealth and piety, yet God saw and knew the truth. All right, so verse 8, Ephraim said, "Yet am I rich, and I have found out substance in all of my labors. They shall find none iniquity in me that were sin." You know, so he was boasting about what they had done, but they didn't want to admit that they had been wrong. You know, God had blessed them. And, you know, the northern kingdom, they did have a lot of prosperity, and they did have a lot of riches, and they did have a lot of good things going for them. But God was not happy with them. God was displeased, and they didn't want to admit that they had sinned against God. And so many times that's a struggle that we face. You know, when we've done wrong, we don't like to admit that. That's always humbling. And we can't get God's help until we admit our need. Verses 9 and 10, in spite of their faithlessness, God still remains faithful to himself and to the covenant which he made with Abraham. All right, so once again, as I mentioned earlier, verses 9 and 10, some promises from God. The Lord would be faithful to them, and he would dwell with them. And he was looking forward to the time that they would come back. And God could see this. You know, that was a great thing. God knew that eventually they would humble themselves and come back to him. But they were not about to do that at the moment. They had turned their back on God. And that God yet had great prophecies for Israel. And they would again be close to him as during the certain feasts when they had lived in booths. All right, so as you read there... And verse number 9, he says, as in the days of the solemn feasts. Right, the solemn feasts were the times. Remember when they would build, at one time where they built booths, they were actually like little shelters or little tents like they made out of branches. And they would all cut down branches and make them into a little shelter. And they sat under these branches. And it was a sign of humility. But they did that during the whole feast. They would sit under these booths. And instead of staying in the houses, and it would shade them from the sun. And they'd be able then to just, in a humble way, be focusing on God and focusing on the things of God. It was really stepping away from all the luxuries of life and being able to spend some quality time with God. You know, that does us good. Yeah, it's good for us to be able to get away and get away from the things that we have and be able to just spend some time alone with God. You know, sometimes we can go on a holiday and do that. Sometimes we can go camping and do that. Or we can just go for an afternoon to a park and just get away from the things of this life and just spend some time quietly with God. And that God was urging his people to do that. God's prophets had often spoken of the coming days of blessing. And we see that mentioned again in verse number 10. The prophets spoke of the blessings that would come. All right. And then God's chastening of the people here again in verse number 11. Israel's sin was nationwide. Now, look at verse number 11. It says, is there iniquity in Gilead? Surely they are vanity. They sacrifice bullocks in Gilgal. Yea, their altars are as heaps in the furrows of the field. Now, there's a lot in that that you won't get unless you look up some of the things and figure it out. So take a look at the map here. When he mentions Gilgal and Gilead, Gilgal was on the east side, or the west side of Jordan. All right, so Jordan River's up here. All right, so you got on the west side of Jordan was Gilgal. On the east side of Jordan was Gilead. So he's mentioning everything on this side and everything on that side. He's really using this as a picture as all of you, both sides of the Jordan River, you've turned your back on God. And he said that they've multiplied their idols. They had so many altars to their false gods that they were as numerous as heaps in the furrows. All right, now these heaps in the furrows, you guys aren't farmers. So when you plow a field, and especially with those old crude plows they had, I mean, farmers today, they have the fancy plows that can turn the dirt over very easily, and the tractors pull it rapidly, and so the dirt just kind of flips upside down, and it all looks fairly smooth, and they're done. But in those days, with the crude plows, they would dig up the ground, especially in the clay and harder areas, and big old lumps and bumps of what would be clotted over. And when they got down to the field, it was all covered with all lumps and clods of dirt and rock and all those kind of things all over the field. And he says, just like the fields are covered with all these lumps and bumps of all your clods of dirt and rock that are out in the field, he says, that's like the number of your altars you got. He says, they're everywhere. They're here, there, and everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's altars. Right? And so he's emphasizing that and making this very picturesque to help us to see the amount of altars that they had. And so God was just rebuking them for their multitudes of idolatry that had crept into their lifestyle. And then verses 12 and 13, God brings up Jacob's history again. He mentions here in 12, he says, and Jacob fled into the country of Syria, and Israel served for a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep. All right, here he's talking about Jacob now. Syria, that's where Padan Aram was, way up in the top, way in the north. Jacob fled from his brother down in Hebron and went up to Padan Aram, a long, long, long ways to the north, way up by the Euphrates River. And he fled up there to escape his brother. And it was there that he found his wife, and he worked for his wife, and he worked for the cattle. And that's what he's speaking of here. He kept sheep for his wife. All right? And then verse 13, and by a prophet the Lord brought Israel out of Egypt, and by a prophet he was preserved. All right, so now he's jumped ahead in history to the time when the people of Israel had gone to Egypt. They'd spent 400 years in Egypt. And now by the prophet he brought them out of Egypt. What prophet's he talking about there? Sorry? Moses, yeah. All right, he's speaking of Moses there. So Jacob was the one that was up in Padan Aram way in the north, and then Moses brought them out of Egypt out of the way down in the south. And so God's bringing back their history and showing them how God had preserved them and how God was with them and caring for them. And so he mentions that there. And then in the last verse, instead of being grateful to God, Ephraim provoked the Lord to anger. All right, so he provoked him to anger most bitterly. Therefore, he shall leave his blood upon him, and his reproach shall his Lord return unto him. All right, so God says, you're not going to get away with this. All right, as a result, the Lord would not take away the guilt and penalty of the innocent blood shed by Ephraim in general and to Molech in particular. So who or what was Molech? Yes. Yes. Okay, so anybody remember one of the nations nearby that was, Molech was their main god? What nation was that? Sasha, what do you think? Yeah, it might have been. The Moabites were the ones that I know that they had Molech was their god. But that, so that was right to the east of Jerusalem area, just the other side of the Jordan River. I'm sure it was spread broad more than that, and the Amalekites probably had it as well. So this was a major problem there. For our good, God will not overlook sin indefinitely. Payday will come if we do not repent and turn from our sins. And, the devil doesn't want us to remember that. But God does. The devil wants us to think we can get away with it and we can cover it up. Nobody will know. It'll be all right. And nobody's going to find out. And the devil's lying to us. And the payday will come someday. And it's better to get it right with God and get it taken care of. And so God urges us to make sure we don't let things linger between us and him. To some of the similes we noted here in the chapter, the days of the solemn feast pictured the time of rejoicing and blessing, and the heaps and the furrows, as I graphically illustrated to you, all the clods of dirt and stones that were in the field once the plows had turned them up, and it represented all their altars. And then Gilead and Gilgal represent the east and the west in Israel there, and the widespread of their sinfulness. Okay, some applications for us. Ephraim was feeding on the wind. If we're not careful, we too will get caught up in the vain activities that have no eternal purpose. That's so easy to do. And it's not even necessarily bad things. Sometimes we can get caught up in things that are not even bad at all. But we just spend our time with that, and that's our focus. And we get off track in things that don't really matter. We need a greater passion. I guess that's one of the reasons why we need to sing and pray to God, God, give me a passion for souls. Because there's people around us all over the place that need Christ. And sadly, I can't speak for you, but I speak for myself. A lot of times it doesn't even cross my mind. You meet people and it doesn't even go through my mind that, yeah, that's a person that needs Christ. They're lost. And so we just need to ask the Lord to revive our hearts. Though Israel had turned away from God and had been so ungrateful for all that God had done for her, God still loved her and longed for her closeness. This is this truth about God is great blessing for us. Though he never wants us to stray from him, if we do, God will never stop loving us and urging us to return. That's just like our great God. He's always wanting us back, always wanting us to come back to him. And he's urging us to come. And if we will ever begin to, if we ever begin to question God, we need to have a history lesson with our heart and recall God's faithfulness and grace and love.